This is Digital Story Podcast number 1031, December 23rd, 2025. Today's theme is more realistic film simulations with a dash of grain. I'm Derek Story. Film simulations by Fuji, Nikon, and OM System are great for color and tone. But there's a missing ingredient when compared to actual analog shots. Grain. This week we're going to explore the virtues of a few dashes of grain and learn how to apply it for more realistic film simulations. All of that and more on today's TVS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. This all started with firmware update 3.0 for my Nikon ZF. It had all sorts of good little features. I got the notice from Nikon, and I went to the page, you know, the download page, and they're always very clinical in how they list, you know, what's involved in the firmware update. And there was some good stuff, the kind of stuff that you would expect, you know, where they, you know, modify the behavior of the LCD to make it more flexible, or maybe allowing you to control when the zebra stripes appear when you're doing manual focusing. You know, things like that, you know, stuff that are refinements. But in there, among all that little stuff that was pretty cool, was something new called film grain options. And I'm going, okay, what is this? So I started doing some reading about it, and a lot of folks were enthused about it. And some folks go, why is this here? Right? The folks that were enthused about it are people that like to shoot film simulations and create analog look in camera. And what I quickly learned, and I can't believe all these years I've been doing stuff, I love film simulations. I love all the creative stuff that you can do in camera, that I never really realized the role of film grain in film simulations to make them look like actual film shots. Now, I had enjoyed the color and I had enjoyed the tone and all that kind of stuff, but I wasn't adding grain unless it was part of a recipe that I loaded into the camera. Now, the cameras that I'm talking about, in addition to the Nikon ZF, are also the OM System OM3, and then in my case, the Fujifilm X100V, but I also tested it on the GFX100S, and I'm assuming that the film grain option is available on almost all modern Fujifilm cameras. So we'll just put that out there. You know, in my case, it's the X100V and the GFX100S, and then everything else, right? And then everything else. So as I started playing around with it, and of course, on the Nikon, I started out with a Tri-X film simulation, because when I think of film grain, I think of Tri-X. And I think of it fondly because I really like the way it looks in Tri-X. What Nikon allows you to do, it has the most flexible in-camera system going. It gives you 6 intensity levels and then 3 grain sizes. So you can dial it up between 1 and 6, and then you have small, medium, and large on the grain sizes. Now, even when I was doing Tri-X, which is a film where you see grain, I learned quickly that the intensity needed to be around 2 or 3, and the size of the grain needed to be small. Otherwise, you know, the grain would just sort of overpower the shot, and I wasn't really looking for that. Really, what I was looking for was to get that realistic Tri-X look. And I even pulled up some Tri-X pictures, actual pictures, so that I could look at them and look how the grain appeared in those shots, and then tried to set, you know, my film grain options accordingly. And I ended up usually around 2 with a small grain. Now, what was interesting about it is that, boy, did it change the shot. And I mean, it changed the shot going from, okay, this is a Tri-X film simulation in a digital camera, to, wow, this really looks like Tri-X film. And Nikon even took this a step further with this firmware upgrade in that they randomize the grain, which is what grain does, right? Is randomized. And they're doing that. So theoretically, any two shots that you take in sequence or three shots or whatever, all will have different grain patterns. How you actually determine this. Ooh. Remember the old Viva paper towel commercial where these people are bored and they decide to test the paper towel against other brands and how fast it mops things up? And I was just going, wow, you must really be bored. Well, comparing film grain patterns from shot to shot is right up there with the Viva paper towel commercial, as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, I'm just going to trust them on that it's a randomized. What I do know is that it looks good. It looks very good. And so then I started playing with it also in color. And I have a Kodak Color 200 simulation for the Nikon ZF that I really like. And that allowed me to do some color shots as well. Now, I always shoot these. This is not going to be a surprise to you. I always shoot these RAW plus a JPEG. Nikon applies the effects to the JPEGs and the RAWs are RAWs and they are left untouched, which I really like because not only in this case, but in almost every creative shooting technique I do, I can just go crazy, right? I can push the edges of the envelope and not worry about it because I have a RAW file if I need it. So I went and did a number of shoots, both in color and black and white, using the film grain option. And then I had RAW plus JPEG, so I had the RAWs as well. And then I started comparing the RAWs, and I was processing the RAWs in DxO PhotoLab 9, which I've been playing a lot with lately. I really like it. Processing them in that. And then I was putting them side by side, the JPEG with the effects applied, the film simulation and the grain, and then the RAW, just as I would normally process a RAW file. And it was fascinating how often, for the kind of shots I was shooting, of course, I was after shots where subjects, you know, would benefit from film grain and that kind of look. But I was surprised that how artificially smooth the RAW files looked. And of course, you know, DxO, they push that part of it, right? Because they're applying a lot of adjustments to it when they initially process the RAW file to, you know, make it look as good as possible, to eliminate noise, to increase sharpness, all that kind of stuff, clarity. You know, they really do a lot of stuff, which I really love. But it was interesting in this case to compare that very clinical RAW file, for lack of a better term, to the Kodak Color, a little bit of grain JPEG, and how much more, in so many ways, realistic the photo looked with the JPEG, which is kind of paradoxical, right? Because in a sense, you know, it has the grain and it has a toothiness and has all that sort of stuff. Why does it look more realistic to my eyes? The only thing that I could come up with is that I grew up in the film age, right? And so that's just sort of embedded in my brain, that sort of look. So whether or not you like it better, what it does tell me is that if it's making those lights go off where I really like it and respond to the shot, then it's telling me that is much closer to the actual analog look than anything I had done previously. So I was going, okay, now I know why they put it in there. I mean, it's the ZF. It's a camera designed for creativity and simulations. They call them color profiles, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And so it not having film grain before doesn't make sense. Now that I think about it, it should have been there all along. So I'm glad they added it. Now, by the way, before I go on to the other two cameras, I'm going to say that I continued down this, you know, road of experimentation. I got my FTZ2 adapter and I put on some vintage Nikon lenses, shot with the film simulation, with the grain, and just going, wow, this is really fun. This is really fun. And I don't have to process anything. I don't have to send anything off. Now, I'm not going to stop shooting film because of this revelation. Not at all. I love shooting film. As you know, those of you that read the newsletter stuff, I had this wonderful shoot up in Bodie where I shot with a Nikon FG. And it was just a great shoot. And Bodie subject material fit perfectly with it and all that kind of stuff. So no, I'm going to keep shooting film. What the thing is, though, that film isn't always convenient. We all know that. Or if I'm in a spur of the moment situation where I go, oh man, that would look really good in this film simulation, let's say Tri-X, I can do it right on the spot. And so I think that's more the way that I'm thinking about. Of course, having fun by adding the vintage lenses and so forth, that just makes it even better. By the way, those of you who do shoot with Nikon and you do put a vintage lens on there, I want to remind you to make sure you log that lens into the non-CPU lens data option. And that's in the menus as well. And when you do this, then in the XF metadata, the lens information will show up. And so you'll know that it's a 50 millimeter AIS Nikon F-mount lens. You'll know maximum aperture f1.8. All that will be in there because you've entered it in that non-CPU lens data option. And it allows you to hold, I don't know, I think like 9 different lenses in there. And so when you put a different lens on, if you've already logged it in, then you just, you know, change the setting to that particular lens. But I find it really helpful. I love having XF data regardless of what lens I have on there. I want to know even if it's an older manual focus lens. So don't forget about doing that, and that way your XF data will be in good shape. So let's go on to other cameras. So I'm going, oh my gosh, I wonder if my OM3 can do this. It seems like it would. It's got that creative control dial on the front. It's got that beautiful Mono 1 and Mono 2 film simulations, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I start exploring, start digging around in there, and doggone it, if it doesn't have its own grain implementation. And what you do with the OM3 is that, you know, you go to, let's say you go to mono, and then you can fine tune that mono setting. And the way I do it, I just go to the super menu, you know, after I've changed it to mono on the creative dial, then I can go to super menu and mono selected there, of course, as well. I can click on that and then I get all the parameters. And there's all sorts of good stuff in the parameters that I knew about before and that I've used: highlights, shadows and midtones, shading effect, sharpness. And if you keep going, film grain effect is there as well. And there you have 4 choices. You have off, low, medium, and high. And so you can add the amount of grain that you want to the particular look that you're striving for. I chose medium with the Mono 1 setting. And the Mono 1 setting is not quite as contrasty as Mono 2. A lot of times, you know, we'll say that Mono 2 is the Tri-X setting. And it's a bold Tri-X. It's like Tri-X maybe pushed to 800 kind of Tri-X. So Mono 1 is not quite as extreme. And I noticed that when I went to the Mono 2 setting, that grain effect had been implemented in there. So Olympus was helping me out, even though I didn't know had that option. But Mono 1 didn't have any applied at all. So I put it on medium with Mono 1, and what it gave me was a little bit of a toned down Tri-X, which I kind of like, because sometimes on the Olympus cameras, the OM system cameras, the Tri-X can be a little too harsh for me. If you want that, it's great. But sometimes I don't want it. A lot of times I don't want it. So now I have Mono 1, and by adding the film grain, now it's like, ooh, this is nice. It's toothy, it's bold, it's black and white, but it's not over the top. I can do that option for all sorts of different things with that camera. Now, I was thinking, well, I wonder if this has been in here forever. So I went to my PenF and I dug around in the menus and I couldn't find it in the PenF. So I don't think it had been introduced then. And I'm talking about the film grain in the PenF, even though they have the Mono 1 and the Mono 2. It might be in there and I just didn't find it. I didn't spend a whole bunch of time looking. But definitely it's in the OM3, and I'm guessing that is probably in the OM1 Mark II as well. So yes, OM System has that option as well. So I did some comparison shots with, yes, my X100V. I said, all right, you know, of all people that would have this in there, it would be Fujifilm, right? Because their whole thing is about film science, and you know, that's what they do. They're not going to pass on this. Now, in the back of my brain, I remember seeing film grain in the menu for my Fujifilm cameras. I have two of them. I have the GFX100S and I have the X100V. You know, I think it's in there. I think I remember seeing it, and I always just sort of blew by it because I was thinking, why would I want to add grain? This is naive Derek speaking before he saw the light on this. So I went back in there, and indeed, it's in the IQ menu. Now, their parameters are not as extensive as Nikon's, although that may change now that Nikon's released their firmware update. What Fujifilm has is roughness and size. So, and then each parameter has its options. So for roughness, they're strong, weak, and off. And for size, you can choose between large and small. Of course, I went right to the Acros film simulation, and I added a film grain to it. And I went with, I was feeling a little frisky at this point. So I went with strong and large on it. Then I took that camera along with the OM3, and I was shooting scenes with both cameras. So I had the Mono 1 in the OM3, and then I had the Acros in the Fujifilm. I have to tell you, both versions of those shots look really good. And they are slightly different too. They're not exactly the same, which, you know, isn't surprising at all. And the grain simulation on the Fujifilm was good. I also tested it on the GFX, and it was interesting. And maybe it's because the sensor is bigger, but the effect was more subtle on the GFX shots that I did. Now, I need to do a little bit more testing in that to see what's going on. Maybe it was other factors that influenced that, but it seemed more subtle on the GFX than it did on the X100V. So now we have three cameras that I know for sure allows you to do this. And I'm telling you, when you compare your film simulation shots with and without grain, suddenly the ones with just look better. They just look better because you're already going for that kind of look, and it just takes it to another level. The thing that I want to mention is, and you know, my co-editor at LiveView, he brought this up when he read my article, because I also put an article on LiveView about this. He said that, you know, if you don't want to be limited by the options in the camera, you know, you can add film grain in post-production. He mentioned Lightroom Classic, but I know other apps carry it as well. So if you wanted to, you could actually add the film simulation in post. You could add the grain in post, and you can, you know, go from there. He and I both agree that the film simulations seem to look better to our eyes when applied in camera. So you could do the film simulation in camera with no grain, and then if you wanted to keep playing with it, add the grain in post using the sliders in Lightroom or whatever application you have. So there is always a post-production solution to this. I was excited about doing it in camera and just having those JPEGs come out and be ready to go, because basically, if I got the exposure right, I'm done. Especially for the kind of shots, for street photography, for certain travel shots, for certain types of portraits, I'm done with the JPEG. I have the RAW, I'll keep the RAW, but the JPEG really shines on these kind of shots. So all this craziness began with a firmware update for the Nikon ZF. So first of all, I got to give a shout out to them for continually refining an already great camera. I've also learned that film grain is artistically different than digital noise. As I examine actual film grain photos and look at the grain patterns, I find them pleasing. They add sharpness and tooth to the pictures. Nikon further enhances this effect by randomizing the grain in a similar fashion as actual film. So theoretically, no two digital pictures are alike when this is applied. But this is also a revelation for my OM3 and my X100V. Again, as much as I previously enjoyed shooting in mono on the OM3 or Astia on the X100V, they never looked quite as analog as I wanted, and now those images come much closer to that. I love shooting with real film, but as I said earlier, it isn't always convenient. Now I feel like I have more control over the type of images I want to create with my digital cameras. It all started with a firmware update and the question, why the heck did they add film grain options to the Nikon ZF? Now I know why. All right, let's see what's going on in industry news this week. Ricoh's latest, haziest version of the GR4 is nearly here. This is an article on DP Review. I have a link in the show notes. Ricoh has announced that the GR4 HDF is officially coming in January, slightly later than the winter 2025 date the company gave when it announced the camera in October. As expected, the variant of the popular compact keeps just about everything consistent with the original model, but swaps out the internal ND filter for one that produces softer highlights. As the name suggests, the main focus of the GR4 HDF is the integrated highlight diffusion filter, HDF. Ricoh says the filter is a result of its advanced inkjet technology. It produces an overall diffused soft look, but the effect is especially visible in the highlights. The HDF can be turned on and off with a single action switch, providing quick access to the feature. The Ricoh GR4 HDF also adds an electronically controlled shutter mechanism, which enables shutter speeds up to 1/16,000th of a second, a substantial boost from the original GR4's 1/4,000th max shutter speed. Those with the original model also benefit from this change, as the mechanism can be installed on the GR4 with new firmware available at the time of the GR4 HDF launch. However, it's currently unclear how much of a concern rolling shutter will be when using the camera's e-shutter mode. Beyond the HDF and shutter speed, the new variant keeps all the same functionality and features as the original version. That includes a 28mm equivalent f2.8 lens, 25.74 megapixel APS-C sensor, 5-axis image stabilization, and a 3-inch LCD. Luckily, Ricoh isn't keeping fans waiting much longer. The GR4 HDF will be available in late January for $1,600, $100 more than the original GR4. All right, that's coming. The reason why I think this is noteworthy is because I do use mild diffusion black mist filters on my X100V and then also on the Nikon too. I have a Polar Pro that combines that slight diffusion with a polarizer. You know, there's something about that look. And the fact that you can turn it off and on the new Ricoh, the GR, with a switch, so you can shoot regular. And then when you're in a situation such as, a twilight scene where the street lights are on, something like that, where you go, boy, wouldn't a little highlight diffusion really add some mood to the shot? And you just flip the switch and then you have that built in. I think for that particular camera, if I had to choose, I would rather have the highlight diffusion than the ND. But, you know, it'd be really cool to have both, but you get one or the other with this particular camera. So I think this is a cool addition. When they announced it before on the previous model, it was a big hit, and I anticipate it will be this time as well. 10 movies about photography worth watching. This is an article on fstoppers.com. I have a link in the show notes. I'm bringing this up because we're kind of coming into the holidays. Some people might be taking some time off, relaxing, maybe just hanging out with friends, family, or just hanging out by yourself, just going, I just don't feel like working right now. And maybe want to watch a movie that incorporates, you know, the art and craft that we love called photography. So I'm just going to give you these movies right here, but they have the descriptions and more details and trailers and all that stuff for these movies in this article. So, you know, you can get to that link in the show notes. But here they are, just to give you a little tease. Rear Window from 1954. That's an Alfred Hitchcock masterpiece. Jimmy Stewart, he's got just like this really cool camera with a big lens that he uses. It's a great movie all the way around. It's one of my favorite Hitchcocks. The next one is called 1 Hour Photo, and this is from 2002. And this is Robin Williams delivering a chilling performance as Cy Parrish, a photo lab technician at a big box store who becomes dangerously fixated on a suburban family whose pictures he has developed for years. Yeah, it's kind of cool, huh? And if you're a Robin Williams fan, you will appreciate his performance in this. It's excellent. That's called 1 Hour Photo from 2002. Also from 2002, City of God. City of God. It's an explosive film about gang warfare in Rio de Janeiro. Puts a camera in the hands of its protagonist, Rocket, a young man surrounded by violence who dreams of becoming a photojournalist. Now, this has a very high rating also, 91%, 97%. So the critics loved it and the viewers loved it. City of God from 2002. And again, there's trailers for all these in the article. Salvador, 1986, also very highly rated. Oliver Stone's raw, confrontational film stars James Wood as a burned-out journalist who heads to El Salvador in 1980 looking for one last big story and finds himself in the middle of a nightmare. This looks good. Again, very highly rated. Salvador from 1986. From 1991, high ratings also. Extremely high ratings from the critics and very good high ratings from the audience. This Australian gem stars Hugo Weaving as Martin, a blind man who takes photographs to verify that the world around him matches what people describe to him. He doesn't trust anyone, convinced that people have lied to him his whole life, and uses his camera to create evidence that he can have others interpret. I have not seen this movie, proof, didn't know about it, so now it's on my film list. Memento from 2000. This is a crazy film. I've seen it two or three times. Christopher Nolan's breakthrough film follows Leonard Shelby, a man with amnesia who can't form new memories. As he hunts for his wife's killer, his system for navigating the world relies heavily on Polaroid photographs, which he labels with notes to remind himself of people, places, and facts. And this is a compelling movie, sometimes slightly disturbing movie, but just really well done, really well done. Kodachrome from 2017. I've talked about this movie on the podcast. It's available on Netflix. I love Ed Harris in this movie. You know, he's a famous photographer dying of cancer who convinces his estranged son to drive him from New York to Kansas, where the last lab in the world still processing Kodachrome is about to close forever. The film is set in 2010, when Duane's Photo in Parsons, Kansas actually stopped processing the legendary film stock. Yes, it's a road trip reconciliation story with familiar beats, but for anyone who has ever felt the weight of undeveloped film, who understands what it means to have irreplaceable images trapped in an obsolete format, The film's central quest carries real emotional stakes. The Kodachrome is a Matt Guffman, but it's one that photographers genuinely understand. It's available on Netflix. You can watch it anytime if you have Netflix already. It's a freebie. The Secret Life of Walter Mitty from 2013. Oh, critics were lukewarm, but photographers embraced Ben Stiller's visually gorgeous film about a daydreaming negative assets manager at Life magazine who embarks on a real adventure to find a missing negative. Sean Penn plays a legendary photojournalist who sent the image meant for Life's final cover, and Stiller's Walter must track him across the globe. I love this movie. I have talked about it before. You know why a critic would, you know, give it a low rating, a 70% rating or whatever, I don't know. Stiller is great. The story is great. And Sean Penn is amazing. By the way, Sean Penn fans, if you haven't seen One Battle After Another, he is crazy good in that movie as well. That's out right now. Then there's two more movies here. One is The Killing Fields from 1984, and one is Everlasting Moments from 2008. I haven't seen either one of those, but they are highly rated and they look very good. And so these are movies that are available. So if you're in the mood for a photography movie during the holidays, want to get a little fix without actually having to get in the car and go somewhere, I think these movies will scratch that itch. Let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to start out with the workshops because we have one coming up in particular that I want to talk about. It's coming up on January 28th. And I think a lot of you would really enjoy this workshop. It's mobile photography with the iPhone, iPad, and mirrorless camera. And the reason why I think you would enjoy this workshop, this online workshop that starts on January 28th, is because, you know, now that our phones are so good at photography, and then many of us like working with iPads as well, and then of course we love our mirrorless cameras, and it's not an either or situation. In fact, you know, we can leverage the best of these components, still travel super light, have all sorts of power, and really make photography as enjoyable as it's ever been. That's what this workshop focuses on. And I think if you like shooting with your smartphone and you like processing on the go and you love your mirrorless camera, I think you're really going to like this workshop. You can sign up for it. I have the link in the show notes, or you can just go to thenimblephotographer.com or go to thedigitalstory.com and click on workshops there. Inner Circle members, you get a 10% discount on this online workshop. It's already affordable at $165. Inner Circle members, you get it for $1,650 off, and that lowers it even more. It runs for a whole month. You have online access. It's a really sweet event, and it begins on January 28th, and I hope to see you guys there. Speaking of our Inner Circle members, I want to give a shout out to them for their support for this community, and want to mention that if you want to join our Inner Circle and become part of this great team of artists, then all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. You can sign up there, and next thing you know, you'll be hanging out with us in our Inner Circle space and be receiving discounts on anything that you do with us in 2026. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast. And finally, a tip of the lens cap to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of The Digital Story. This is a printing time of year that we're in right now. You know, I talked about the movies earlier, but printing is also a great thing to do. If you have a little bit of time off right now, you know, make some prints. Go back through your pictures from 2025 and pick out the best six or eight of them and make archival prints from them and store them and have those just available. If you do that every year, after a few years, you have a whole gallery showing of your best stuff on Red River paper that's immune to anything that could go wrong electronically, right? You know, and Red River paper really makes it easy. They explain the different qualities of their papers. And so you can get the paper that has the surface you want, that has the archival quality that you want, and has the feel that you want. So whatever you're putting away for posterity, it is exactly to the specifications that you prefer. All you have to do is click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story, nose around a bit, look up papers, look up the different things that you want to do, and then order some paper and get to work. Get some of those wonderful images that you shot in 2025 on paper and saved and on the wall and fine art greeting cards and all that beautiful stuff. Don't keep them trapped in your phone. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, have a great holiday. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.